Hi everyone, this is Jenna with She Leads Her Life. Thank you for being here. And we have one of our favorite guests back on the show today. I hardly even have to give her an introduction because you will hear how eloquently she speaks and the knowledge that she will share. But I would love for her to share a little bit about herself, her background. I know you will love her just as much as I do, and what a profound impact she has had on my life. And I'm just going to pass it over. Dr. Keely Reese, welcome to She Leads Her Life.
Oh, thanks, Jenna. I'm so happy to be back here. I love talking to you and talking to your listeners. Absolutely. I am a health educator by training. I have been in health education and public health for over 25 years now. I work at a university setting, but I also work in a lot of other, you know, could over the years, corporate settings, healthcare related fields, all with the grounding of women's health, health education, sexuality education. Those are my big primary areas that I work in. And then helping with a lot of leadership in those spaces, leadership for, you know, how do we do this kind of work and not burn out? And how do we take care of ourselves during this work? And so it's absolutely a pleasure to be here. And I'm so excited to talk about hormones, one of my favorite topics. So I'm super excited.
Yeah. So I, just last week I had on my heart recently, just this idea that we, you know, we need to have these conversations, especially with women and young women and even women advanced in age. Like, we all need to be having this conversation, not to shy away from it. And so we were actually traveling back from a family trip, and I said to my husband, like, you know, I really want to do an episode on hormones. And he's the supportive husband, and, you know, like, oh, okay, great. And I said, oh, I know exactly who I need to call. And that's Dr. Keely Reese. And just in that moment, I'll let you kind of share, but I texted you and said, let's have this conversation. And what did you say back to me?
I said, oh my gosh, it's such perfect timing. I've been doing this work for about a year and a half now. I am a technical writer for a woman that does a lot of work on hormones, and particularly perimenopause and menopause. And so it's been an absolute pleasure to be a researcher and a writer for an organization that puts out big international work on menopause and kind of blowing out of the water. And if you're anywhere on that side of TikTok, and you know what I mean by that, right? On that side of TikTok, if you find yourself scrolling with other perimenopausal women, individuals, or even on, she's on Instagram and stuff too, but you will come across, there's quite a array of narrative out there, and women who are really coming out to talk about their own experiences, but then practitioners who are very specialized in the endocrine system and really helping women understand what's going through their bodies, or individuals that have a vulva and have uterus and ovaries. And so I even try to take the gender part out of it and say that a person with a uterus and ovaries and fallopian tubes, because many people are menstruating and that may look very different today. And so it's just perfect timing because I routinely am doing this work. And then on the other spectrum, I was just telling Jenna that I'm just kicking off my fourth summer teaching teens comprehensive sex education. And what do we start off with but hormones and the menstrual cycle and anatomy and physiology, and just helping them really make sure that they have some really good language and lexicon around their bodies and how to navigate those conversations first with themselves, but how do they ask for help when they need it?
Yeah.
It's perfect timing. It was kismet. Yep.
I love how sometimes the universe just aligns too. Yeah. So let's kind of start from a 30,000 feet from above, and really, how do the hormones start impacting the body, and around what age would you say?
Yep, absolutely. So when we think about puberty, we often think about puberty as like the onset of it, the second there's like a switch that's flipped on. But what is really happening for young people is the years leading up before there's like an emergence of those hormones. There are a lot of things happening. And so we've also noticed too, over the years, from a very large perspective, we see puberty hitting at a much earlier age now. So the average onset of puberty might look closer to like 11 or 10 or 12, depending on gender and biological sex. But one of the things that's happening before they even hit that age, so let's say that there's a young person that is that has a uterus, a fallopian tubes, has a vulva, they're developing, their hormones are changing 2 to 3 years prior to that, and their bodies are going through a shift. So when a lot of parents talk to me about their 9-year-olds or their 8-year-olds, or that all of a sudden there's like a shift in language or action or body image, self-consciousness, or even sometimes it can look like mood changes. A lot of times parents will be like, oh my goodness, my child is all of a sudden so much more bold or sassy, or they'll use all kinds of adjectives. And in my head, I'm just thinking, well, yep, there's this rumbling that is happening in their bodies years before they ever have a menstrual cycle, their first menses, or before they would have development or the lowering of their voices or those sorts of things. And so a lot of times we just don't recognize that puberty really starts prior to the direct onset. And again, there's not like this immediate on button that happens. It's a gradual shift. And the more that we can help young people move into those phases and know what's happening to their bodies, help them have a language for it, help them understand what it might be feeling like or looking like or things that they might experience. And then helping normalize those and take the stigma away from it, of it being something that's scary or that they get made fun of. There's already going to be enough outside pressures that they feel from their own peers of when they go through puberty, that I think the home or the school or the faith setting or just our families, extended families, we can make these transitions a lot more sacred and safe and enjoyable when they know what's coming. Yeah. And just on the other end, same thing with menopause. I would equate it the very same thing. It's usually we're so fear-based around it because we don't understand it and we don't know what's going to happen or when.
Yeah. You know, this is going back. So I don't know if I think I shared this in a previous episode that Dr. Rees was a professor of mine back in the day. And I distinctively remember you talking about, we were talking about sexual health with young adolescents. And mm-hmm. I remember you saying one of the best things you can do is to talk to children almost like ahead of time.
Yep.
Right. So not necessarily when they are all of a sudden 13 and they get their period. That's not the time to actually have these conversations. I mean, that's a great, you can talk to them then, but the importance of like prepping them and having open and honest conversations. So like you said, they know what to expect and that there's not fear around this, what's going on with their body and these changes.
Yep. And I think too, that so much has already happened by the time you sit down and have those conversations, those big talks, or we hold them all off till this one time to sit down and talk to someone about menstrual products or what that's going to look like. And so when they're 8 and 9 and 10 and 11, they're so curious anyway. And developmentally, they're so not afraid yet to typically ask questions and be more curious and inquisitive. And so I usually try to really encourage parents and guardians to just embark on that, capitalize on the fact that they are curious and normalize the conversations. One of the things when you ask that question about the 30,000 foot that I really like that's happening today for a lot of young people is a much more narrative around body positivity and around body image, that there's no one size that fits all. There's no one way this is going to look. And starting to hear and see more inclusive languages or language used around bodies and used around even gender or sexual orientation or whatever it might be. And the hard part is, while we in some of those spaces see a lot more of that, we have on the exact opposite end of the spectrum communities and parenting and teens that are growing up in spaces where they're very afraid to talk about their bodies, about their gender, about their sexual orientation, about anything that's happening to their body because it's been so politicized. So it's a very polarized 30,000 foot. It's either where we're a lot more seeing and hearing those things in social media spaces and parents and parenting groups, or the opposite, where we're almost fundamentally going the opposite direction of back to what, you know, don't talk about it, just say no. And so, but I do like where, at least in the spaces that I work and where we're working with, you know, sexuality education, from a national perspective, we're using very inclusive language. So people who have a vulva or an individual that has a penis and testosterone, and so that we're not assigning a gender to it for them, but we're talking about it that, hey, you might be in this spectrum someplace. And so that's exciting and hopeful for a lot of young teens. And then we still have to keep having these conversations because a lot of teens don't have this. They don't have a trusted adult that they can even ask these questions to, or they live in a community or a state where it's illegal for certain things to be happening around their sexual orientation or gender identity. And so it's a very interesting time to be a human and navigating these things, a parent or the teen themselves, or an adult woman that's navigating their, you know, reproductive system.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. I think it's so, so important. And that's why we have these conversations, right? And this is why these conversations are so important. Switching a little bit, going down the lifespan to the female cycle, and we're going to kind of do a deep dive a little bit. And I shouldn't even say female cycle. You're right. It should be, okay, the menstruating cycle, right? How do hormones impact your health, especially those that are menstruating?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we talk about for individuals that are, so, and when we talk about hormones, remember, we're just talking about endocrine system in general. So the endocrine system is an integral system to our entire being. So a lot of times these hormones get very sexualized. This is the part that makes me very, I get fired up about it, right? They are like, literally, when we think about the word hormone, it is a substance in our body that is made up of an amino acid or a protein that is just going in and out of our bloodstream and into our organs and out and flowing freely. And they're just a part of our biology. And the world has sort of sexualized our hormones, or put our hormones into two categories, estrogen and female identifying, testosterone and male identifying, when in general, every person, regardless of their biological sex, right, has all of these hormones. And the predominant ones that we're kind of talking about today would be estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. But there's many more beyond that, but those are the predominant ones. And every person from the time they are in utero to the time they die have certain fluctuating amounts of these hormones in them. That's what keeps us alive. And so one of the things I like to shift people in thinking about hormones is just really this celebration of that you have this endocrine system, it's functioning. And then for individuals that might have these predominant hormones of estrogen or progesterone, there might be things that are causing interruptions for those hormones to be flowing. And individuals that are struggling with a hormone disruption, they would give anything. They would give their right arm to be able to have this fluctuating hormone in their system that is regulated and really working in tandem with all the other systems. And what is happening for a lot of individuals is that's just not the case, all the way from when they're teens all the way to older adults. And so for good or for bad, hormones are just these beautiful substances that are helping us function and stay alive and work in tandem with all the other hormones to help us digest food, to regulate temperature, to regulate how we sleep, to regulate stress, to regulate muscle mass. And without them, we just don't really function. So yes, and when we talk about the three, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, for sure, they are definitely tied to the reproductive system, which is the whole reason then they become taboo to talk about, is because then it's equated to, oh, sexual organs, we shouldn't talk about those, when in general, they're no different than when we talk about any other hormone in the body. So when we talk about how the hormones as we age impact a person's health that has, say, a uterus and fallopian tubes, a vulva, right? So maybe someone that identifies as a female, or someone that just identifies as having a menstrual cycle. There are so many impacts that those hormones have on that person. So number one, The biggest impact is they are what signal the body every single month to do a amazing, beautiful function. We have an ovulatory cycle and we have a menstrual cycle that are happening simultaneously at the same time because of estrogen, progesterone, and even testosterone. And so every 28 days to 30 days to 32 days, and every person that menstruates is going to have a very different cycle. But we always kind of go deflect back to an average or a median, but some have shorter, some have longer. And so throughout that whole cycle, there's this series of things that are just happening that are just natural and so normal and so beautiful and are really misunderstood. And so during that whole month, there's going to be things that are just absolutely, you know, and especially when we're talking about teens and as they're trying to figure out what their cycles are. But if we're talking about someone at late stage, maybe getting ready to enter perimenopause, these hormones shift. And so I think there's also this misnomer that once you have a menstrual cycle, it's just smooth sailing until you're in your 60s, 70s, or 80s. And I think people even misunderstand when that is all sort of happening. And so what's happening, the basic breakdown in the cycle is women are experiencing different phases of cycling. So this is why it's called a menstrual cycle, because there's this cycle of their hormones in their body. And the other two hormones are the luteinizing hormone and the follicle stimulating hormone. So whether a person with a uterus is ever going to have or choose or want or able to have a baby, their body might be going through a version of this cycle. Mm-hmm. And every 14 days, there's this rise in estrogen. And there's a rise in what's called the luteinizing hormone. And so right before ovulation, there's this big surge of estrogen. And what comes along with that big surge before estrogen? Changes in vaginal secretions, changes in vaginal tightness, awareness. There's changes in our breast tissue. There's changes in our digestive system. All with the notion of preparing the body to release an egg from the ovary. That's the whole purpose, is the body is preparing this whole uterus that there might be an egg that's released from the ovary and implanted on the uterus. So of course there's this cycle of beautiful hormones happening. And if there is a meetup of a sperm and an egg, if that's the person's choice to reproduce, then the implantation on that uterine lining then causes this very large surge of progesterone to develop. And post ovulation, progesterone is there building up the uterine lining so that it's nice and thick and juicy and full of nutrients and available for that blastocyte to implant on that uterine wall. Well, if this is a person that chooses never to become pregnant or they're not of that age. They don't want to be pregnant. They're post having children. They choose not to have children. That progesterone is still going to build up whether there's an egg there or not. And that buildup of progesterone causes the estrogen to go way down because the body is thinking, hey, we might build a baby here. We might need extra hormones. Prolactin kicks in and all these other great hormones. And then after 14 days of that, if nothing actually was implanted on that uterine wall, then the body sheds that very thick uterine lining, all to then release it through a menstrual cycle and then start the whole cycle over again. And so every 28 days, a person that menstruates is going through this. And the ways that it impacts a person's life could be anywhere from right before a rise in estrogen, they may have absolutely wicked headaches, or the deep fall in estrogen causes them to have a headache. A lot of times the rise in progesterone makes women feel very, or individuals with a uterus makes them feel very industrious and energized. Or at the end of that progesterone cycle, when there's a dip in that, they sometimes often right before progesterone starts building up again, they may have, anything from migraines, breast tenderness, all sorts of things happen to cue the body what's sort of happening with that. But in Western sort of civilization, we've equated those things with very tumultuous. We've really made individuals feel like this is a time in their cycle that they are irrational, that they are having a mental health crisis, that they might be crazy. Like literally women in the early, hundreds of years ago were so revered during these cycles and phases, aligned with the lunar system. And then, all the way to 100 years ago, almost 200 years ago, it really started going the opposite direction, and we started really degrading individuals that were bleeding and putting them away and literally telling all the way up until the 1950s, we told women that were menstruating not to dance, not to be physically active, not to go into water because you would back up the flow in the vaginal canal and it would cause they literally believed and told women it would cause tuberculosis. So talk about not understanding disease, right? And disease transmission. And they would tell them that it would cause insanity. And so a lot of times, and again, this was at the end of a cycle too. So an end of like perimenopause, menopausal, when women were really seeing changes in estrogen and progesterone, they didn't know what to do with women. So they put women in asylums. For sure. And this is only a few decades ago that we were treating women like that. And so understanding the history of this also really helps one really appreciate maybe where we are today with understanding hormones and teaching about it and talking about it out loud. Because 20, 30, 40 years ago, we weren't talking about that in the same way, in the same spaces. There were people, but it was very in isolated communities, let's put it that way.
I think about, that's such a beautiful way of like painting that picture, Keely. And I think about the shame that we put around a natural part of, somebody's body. And like the natural progression of life. And so also like having this conversation, what are some symptoms of maybe someone's just feeling all of a sudden like off in regards to what are some symptoms? Like, yes, you're going to have all these different things that are going to impact you, but what are some symptoms that maybe, let's give our provider a call to get, and should we be getting our hormones tested, number one? And what are some of those symptoms that you would say, hey, you know what, this might be a good conversation. You may have estrogen dominance or, not enough progesterone, those types of things. What are those kind of areas that we should be looking for?
Yeah, and definitely throughout one's life, every decade, I would say your body is going to go through enough of a massive shift that it might cause you pause for concern or wonder. So even if we're working with like a young teen and they're experiencing extraordinary painful cramping or amenorrhea, they're not having a period for month after month after month, and then they have it, anything that would start to look like an irregular pattern of things, we might look at having a young person even go in and say, let's take a look at what's going on. Is there some endometrial lining situations happening? Is there some possible endometriosis? We would look at PCOS. We would want to check for things with other organs, looking at functioning of pancreas, looking at function of thyroid, looking at function. And so a good, and this is where anyone, doesn't matter what genitalia anyone has, because I would say the same thing for someone with a penis and testosterone and testes as well. Anytime there just starts to be something that noticeably is a pattern, and we are so often not taught to listen to our own bodies and brush it off as, it must be just stress, or everything gets equated to it must be stress. But sure, stress causes a lot of things, but over time, when it comes to the endocrine system and looking at, like, particularly if we're talking about progesterone and estrogen and what's happening with the thyroid, we would want someone to feel like they could, you know, have some answers and really be understood, because it might be that amenorrhea, dysmenorrhea, so very painful menstrual cycles, painful, we're talking people have to miss days of work, hours of work. There's cramping, and then there's cramping, and helping kind of understand what's the normal range. One of the things I work on with college students, because they're usually 18 to 25 and they're kind of right in the middle of really having a pretty solid cycle, we really start talking about, like, it's pretty okay to have cramps. Cramps are an okay thing. Mild cramping is exactly what should be happening in a menstrual release, because it's the peristalsis of the uterus releasing all of that built up lining. And so if you're releasing something out of your body and it's being shed, of course there's this movement and cramping. That's why cramping happens. It's not an abnormal. Cramping is a very normal process of menstrual cycle. It's when it becomes days on end, when the bleeding does not stop, when it's excessive bleeding, when it's 10 days, 14 days. And then when we move to, like, childbearing years, you know, we would also, any dysregulation or changes in menstrual cycle, changes in mood that go along with that, changes in weight that are extraordinarily and unexplained. We all have weight gain. That's normal. That's normal fluctuation, but maybe not normal for you to have gained excessively 20 pounds in like 6 months. So then it might trigger that functional medicine practitioner to say, hey, let's look, are we experiencing perimenopause? Are we experiencing another thing? If it's early, I mean, there's women in their 30s that are experiencing menopause, perimenopause. There used to be this, like, this is the average age of menopause. And it's getting really harder to say that, just as menstrual cycle starting is so much earlier, we're seeing the earlier onset of perimenopause. So it's not atypical for a woman that's menstruating in her 30s to all of a sudden experience some really drastic changes. And so I always just say, any signs or symptoms that are repetitive and more than 1 or 2 months. I mean, you might have a month or two that's off of something because of travel or changes in job or obviously childbirth or those sorts of things. But once it becomes ongoing after that, and there's no explainable reason that's making sense to you, this is when it's time to start doing some deeper digging.
Yeah, absolutely. And finding a good provider that, and it may take trying a couple of different providers to see who will listen to you and really connect, that you feel comfortable connecting with and sharing that information with, I think is so important. Keely,
go ahead.
I was going to switch topics and say, Could you give just like a brief overview of the difference between perimenopause and menopause? And then we'll
Awesome.
I have a question that I've been dying to ask. And I've been doing kind of my own research in the connection between anxiety and depression with perimenopause and menopause. So that's kind of where I wanted to head. So I would love to hear kind of what your definition of the difference between perimenopause and menopause is first.
Yep, absolutely. So there's a big difference. And there's, I would say in the last few years, luckily, there's a lot of people being very vocal talking about this and teaching the difference of it. So when a person is moving towards maybe later stages of childbearing years, might be starting, and this is where it's going to be so unique to every single person. So what I always start off by saying is, it's always really hard to compare notes to your best friend, or even sometimes to your sister or to your mother, because each person goes through these stages so differently because of lifestyle, because of genetics, because of work balance, life, and whether they had children or didn't have children, whether they're on medication, they're not. There's so many variables that make every person's case so unique, which is goes right back to what you were saying, Jenna. It is vital that they have a practitioner that listens to them and their body, and not universally kind of prescribing everything, you know, to the same people. So first of all, perimenopause. And so there's actually what we call there's a menopausal symptom severity inventory, where we have been studying for years how women transition in menopause, and or individuals who have a uterus and ovaries are transitioning. And so it is absolutely women who are entering perimenopause first will often notice very subtle. And then some women, it's very abrupt changes in their menstrual cycle. Some women have no changes in the actual menstrual cycle itself. And all of the other symptoms are kind of over here in a random abstract kind of conglomeration that they do not connect to perimenopause because their period hasn't stopped or it hasn't changed. So they don't often put two and two together that. And so instead we start to think, oh my gosh, I'm losing my faculties here. I'm not thinking right. And so changes in menstrual flow can occur. That could change in the blood, the mucus, the color, the quantity of blood flow. But then there's other women will have none of that happen and they'll still be in perimenopause. So that could also look like we talked about before, cramping that was very mild to all of a sudden, oh my goodness, we have some very painful and more frequent cramping. But perimenopause is the time leading up to this point. So this is kind of like what I was talking about in puberty. There's like this rumbling that's happening before the stoppage of your menstrual cycle. So just like when you are preteen, you haven't had a menstrual cycle yet, but there's this rumbling of changes happening in your body and your brain and your just physical chemistry. And so perimenopause can be 3 to 10 years long before you actually hit menopause, right? So it's the time leading up and can be 3 to 10 years before menopause. It is often during menopause when women start to notice some other signs and symptoms. That can be very, you know, lead to much frustration, confusion, and a lot of dissatisfaction with their self and sort of their world around them. This is the more common ones start to look like insomnia. Vaginal dryness can be the first one that shows up. So whereas before vaginal lubrication was very easy, very natural, all of a sudden that is sometimes the first thing someone will notice. Sometimes all of a sudden painful, either penile or digital intercourse. So all of a sudden that can be, you've never had painful intercourse and all of a sudden that becomes painful.
Is that because of the vaginal dryness?
Yep. those two go hand in hand. But also the muscles are changing because the what is happening in this rumbling before menopause happens is already the levels of estrogen and the levels of progesterone are already starting to shift. Maybe not enough to cause the menstrual cycle to stop, but it's causing it enough to cause, like, the lack of estrogen will immediately cause the elasticity and the lubrication of the vaginal canal to change. So just a subtle shift in estrogen in the body can cause some of those things. Sometimes the very first symptom is dryness of skin and hair becomes brittle and like really drastic changes. Like a lot of women in their 20s and 30s and 40s sort of have a regulated breast tenderness or post having children don't recognize and don't have as much tenderness. And all of a sudden in perimenopause, breast tenderness becomes all of a sudden a thing. They might not have even ever had breast tenderness prior to a menstrual cycle. And then one of the things you mentioned earlier too was about mood and anxiety and depression. We have been watching and tracking, and really good studies have come out. And I'm happy to share any of the studies with you if you put anything in your show notes or want to send to people. That the rise in anxiety, particular in perimenopause, those 3 to 10 years, is really significantly high. Now, the interesting thing with that is that it's also just a time in life where you're really experiencing different things as a parent. Maybe in your career, you're at the pinnacle of your career, at the height of the career, you might have a different workload than you had before. You're now also possibly starting to care for aging parents. So like there's this amplification of just life in general in perimenopause, but it's like this perfect storm. And so a lot of the research, it's correlational. So we can't say there's this direct cause between menopause, perimenopause, and anxiety, but we see them co-happening at the same time. And those of us that study the hormone and the endocrine system, it'd be really hard. It's the similar to what we see in adolescence when their moods change and they haven't had a menstrual cycle. You'll see 9, 10, 11 year olds that just have a drastic change in their moods or mood swings. And that's because their bodies are building up estrogen and getting used to having more progesterone or progesterone in general, you know, as the ovaries have developed now. And that's the organ that is releasing that hormone. As well as the brain and the pituitary gland. So there's also changes in the brain that happen when we study depression. When we study depression and the changes that are happening with serotonin and the dopamine centers that coincide with the decrease in progesterone and the decrease in estrogen, it also is sort of a perfect storm. And remember, a lot of our sex hormones, our reproductive organs, are really connected to the pituitary gland and sexual organs, so ovaries or testes, but also that pineal gland that's releasing those. And so there can be frustration, there can be confusion, there can be a lot of like frustration. And the signs and symptoms, I actually did a whole article, like there's this whole thing about like uncommon signs of menopause. And a lot of times even inflammation is another big one that we see in perimenopause. All of a sudden you have joints that ache that you never had achy joints before, ligaments that are loosening. And when you start to do the science behind this, it's the shifting, what progesterone helps the strengthening of ligaments. Think about prolactin when you're pregnant, prolactin when you're breastfeeding. These hormones create ligament suppleness, right? Well, now as we're aging and that estrogen is dripping downward and that progesterone as well, we see the ligaments taking an onset of that. The other ones that you hear about a lot are probably like hot flashes, but what they don't talk about and what people that move into this phase, you don't even know that you're having that, and because you can't even articulate it because it's almost more like the chills and then you sweat. And so a lot of people don't equate that of like, oh, I'm having a hot flash, I'm freezing cold, and then you sweat. And a lot of women will actually think they have the flu for like months on end. They're like, oh my gosh, am I getting the flu? I feel like literally the symptoms start to feel like the flu.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Isn't it? I know. Or yes. Ocular headaches. Skin rashes, redness, dry, brittle hair, nails. We talked about those. Those are some of the other really, the other one that we do not talk about enough is the sensation in the mouth. It's called burning mouth, burning tongue, or a metal taste in the tongue. And now a lot of us associate that with COVID. If you had COVID, a lot of you lost your smell and sense of taste. That is what perimenopause will often feel like. You'll have a metallic taste or a burning tongue. And there's no other way to describe it other than it feels like your tongue is burning off and you've done something to it. And it must be that you're losing your mind.
This is why these conversations are so important. I'll say it again and again and again, because it can, if you're having any of these symptoms, and there's a wide range of them, it can feel like you're on an island by yourself. And then up late Googling, am I dying? Right? Because you don't know what these symptoms are. And it's all related to the stage in life you are. And, you know, having these conversations with our young children all the way through, if we can just normalize the changes that are happening to our body, it really will help, I think, all of us feel like, oh, well, noticing, it's almost like metacognition for our bodies, instead of, you know, saying, oh my gosh, something's wrong with me, right? We were always taught something is wrong with me, instead of, oh, well, this is noticing. This is interesting that my body in perimenopause is reacting this way.
It's so true. And normalizing it, helping people also know that you don't then need to suffer in silence, that there are remedies, there are actual treatments that help a person for the, like, if you're in perimenopause for 5 years, 10 years, you don't need to suffer. Our grandmothers and our great grandmothers suffered in silence and really did end up having probably a lot more depression and anxiety than we ever knew, because they really thought something drastically was happening to them, or that, you know, you read stories about, there's some really good historical documents about this too, where they literally thought they were dying. And then again, to be put in isolation and treated that way, we really medicalized it and made it something that was so scary, versus the information is power. And then the information allows people to take action. Right. And like some of the other things too, like all of a sudden you may have never had high blood pressure in your entire life. And all of a sudden overnight, you find yourself experiencing high blood pressure, fluttering of the heart. We often see some other things too, when some of the other really uncommon ones, we call them uncommon, but when you start talking about this, the number of people that experience them make them not uncommon. So a couple of the other ones I would talk about are really fast, like osteoporosis, like really changing in body structure, prickly legs and limbs, limb pain or paresthesia, and also itchiness of the scalp or skin. And again, you can literally start to feel like, what is wrong with me? Another big one that will change, and it has to do with the pelvic floor. So anyone who has had children listening, you will know what happens to the pelvic floor after birth and during breastfeeding and the uterus shifting, but then that prolactin that goes away if you breastfed or after giving birth. Like we really have to work on the pelvic floor muscles. Well, the same thing is happening in perimenopause, is that lack of estrogen and progesterone, the normal cycling that's happening. That is what helps strengthen our pelvic floors. And all of a sudden women in there that are going through perimenopause might all of a sudden experience incontinence, and they've never had incontinence before. Other women who have maybe had natural childbirth, and they're maybe a little bit more used to incontinence, but all of a sudden women that are not, they're like, what is this? And so there's just this myriad of things that we just don't talk about enough, that can really dispel a lot of myths about it. So then when you transition, the difference is you could be in this transition of perimenopause. And typically while you're in perimenopause, you are still having your menstrual cycle. You are still shedding a uterine lining. You might, and you probably are still ovulating, and that meaning you're still reproductively able and capable, might be far and fewer between. One ovary might be stronger than the other of releasing an egg. One might be done sooner than the other. But then what will start to happen is the spacing of menstrual cycles. It usually doesn't happen overnight that you just stop having a cycle. What'll happen is the cycles will start to look and feel different. They'll either be really long, and you could have a 10 or 20 day cycle, and that would not be abnormal in perimenopause. And then the next cycle might be 5 days long. Then the next one might not be for 2 or 3 months. And then you might have one regularly for 6 months. And then it just sort of, you just kind of keep tracking that. When you've gone one entire full year without any bleeding or bleeding through, one whole year, then they have considered you to transition into what's called menopause. And then menopause is from then on, typically until we die. And even then you're going to go through transitions in menopause of changes in your body. You can still have some similar symptoms, but the symptoms start to look different, feel different. And a lot of individuals will seek out still therapy, hormone therapy through menopause to regulate the rest of like menopause so that you're not living miserably. And the one thing I just want to really dispel in this thing today, if you walk away with anything, I want women, people who menstruate, to understand that we have done so much scaring of women around hormones from the time they're little to the time they're in menopause, around breast cancer and around other things too, that the narrative for a long time got out there and misinformed because of some poor research that had been done about hormone therapy. And so you had a lot of women in the 90s, 80s, 90s, and even 2000s, and still 2020s, that are very fearful of when their doctors mention taking a hormone therapy. They get very fearful because it's been drilled into their heads that it's going to lead to uterine cancer or cervical cancer or breast cancer. And we just know so much more about the science today. And that could be a whole nother podcast. Or again, I can share some really good articles with Jenna that you, if you want to share out to your readers or put in your show notes. But there's just so much good evidence that show that there are a lot of individuals that will be a really good fit for some hormone therapy to help them through perimenopause and menopause. Not everyone, and not everyone will choose that or will be a great candidate because of other underlying health conditions. But when that is the case, then there are still a lot of other remedies that can help that are herbal and medicinal and lifestyle that can really help mitigate some of those symptoms. And even just to name them and claim them and then just help people process through them can be helpful too. But I just want to put that out there that there's a lot more help out there in 2023 for women who want to navigate this and not feel miserable for 10 years or 15 years or however long it's going to be.
Quality of life, because it matters. Yes. You matter. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. If you feel like something is off, listen to your body and get the help that it needs. And it's so powerful. Like you said, knowledge is power. Keely, to close today, I would love for you to just kind of rattle off. What are some of, I mean, we could do a whole new podcast on this too.
I know.
It's just like certain lifestyle, naturopathic, even if there's certain supplements, or what are some of your top favorite ways to kind of help balance those hormones in a healthy way?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I'm a huge fan of these because I think they're just a great thing to have in your arsenal. I think as humans, we need toolboxes that are multifaceted. And every decade, as I've mentioned before, we need new tools in the toolbox. So what might have helped you in your 30s, and if you're in your 40s now, that tool that you use to help calm maybe some anxious feelings, some maybe cramping, that might not work what you did. If you did yoga, hot yoga in your 30s, hot yoga might actually exasperate your perimenopausal tendencies. And so might not be the modality that's best for you. So I always really go back to figure out what have you been doing? What didn't work? What of those things is not working? And so I always go back to the basics of what are you doing around your gut health, right? So what are we putting in our bodies, around our bodies? We didn't even go into disruptors of hormones, but what can we reduce around us, like PFAS in our water, right? How can we fight for having clean water in our communities, or BPA, right? Or making sure that we're not using things that have flame retardants in them, right? So those are hormone disruptors. So just really looking at our lifestyle around us, taking out products. I think this is good from when we have young children all the way to us when we're aging, but having products that don't have a lot of phthalates in them, that don't have a lot of pesticides, phytoestrogens, making sure your food sources are free of extra antibiotics that are just going to exasperate and sort of disrupt some of those hormones. And then on the natural side of things, I love like teas, right? And tinctures and black cohosh, kava tea, primrose oil are some of the absolutely tried and true over and over in many cultures that work and really help with some of those symptoms of maybe itchy skin feeling or tingling legs or hot flashes.
Primrose oil. Keely, that's not one I've like tried before. I love learning new. What is primrose oil good for?
Primrose oil is really helpful for reducing the number of hot flashes and night sweats, especially. And yep. Primrose oil, you can take in an oil, but you can take it in a supplement too. Mm-hmm.
So good.
And it's also sometimes added into some teas. Awesome. So those are really good for, and kava has been studied for a long time. C-R-K-A-V-A, kava tea, kava tinctures. Really help with like hot flashes and night sweats. And then other things that we really look at, and a lot of the work that I do with this organization and just writing and technical research, we always come back to like the ways to manage lifestyle, right? So what can we reduce in terms of stress, weight management? And this isn't about losing weight. This is about being at a weight that you feel good about, because one of the things that they do not talk about is in perimenopause, the overnight weight gain. So someone that will have had maintained a weight in and out for 30 years, it's almost like an overnight shift that in like 6 months, women will gain 15, 20 pounds and have not changed a thing in their diet or exercise. Mm-hmm. And they beat themselves up. This is probably one of the biggest things women struggle with in this era of perimenopause, before they get it kind of regulated and figured out with some hormone changes or some just lifestyle changes. So the things that you used to do to manage your weight probably won't work anymore, because you're fighting an uphill battle of a hormone shift. And so really coming back and recognizing your own body image, really loving kindness meditations, a lot of mind body techniques. I believe heavily in some form of meditation that allows the person to really be in tune with their body during that time. Self-loving activities that help nurture and help re-regulate sort of the stress hormone, because you're already stressed and then the stress hormone is already up there, because estrogen and progesterone protect us from stress. And when those start to dissipate, it's really hard. And a lot of those things that we do, like mind body things, just help with our mental functioning too, right? Because we get really hard on ourselves during that time. And then of course, working with a good doctor and or therapist, because during that time, if you are experiencing extraordinary amounts of anxiety or depressive symptoms, then having someone really take a look at their SSRIs, or looking at, you know, what's happening with serotonin uptake. You know, maybe the person had been on antidepressants, having conversations about, they might have to change dosage or change medications during this time, because again, the endocrine system is changing other things that's going to adapt how your body's responding to the medication that you might be taking for that. And so just kind of keeping in mind that, yeah, either the estrogen or combination of estrogen and progesterone treatment too can be a really great modality. And there's patches, there's oral supplementation that are just incredible. They're low cost. Most insurances, family planning clinics work really hard to get those in the hands of women.
That's so beautiful, Keely. And what I love most about this conversation is we are talking about the body as a whole. And that sounds like such a simple thought, but really it feels as though, you know, mental health and hormone health and cardiovascular health, that it's all become so separate. And really it works hand in hand. If your hormones are off, then your mental health can be off. And then your cardiovascular health, it can cause, you know, your heart, thyroid can be, it's all one ongoing system. And so having this conversation is just so helpful. And to our listeners, I think a big takeaway, like Keely said, is just you're not alone. And that to have the conversation with different practitioners. And not to get frustrated, I do want to quickly just share a personal story in case this relates with anyone else. But it was shortly after my second daughter was born, and I was working two jobs, and life was crazy, right? We had two young kids, and I went to one doctor, and I said, I'm just not feeling myself. I feel tired all the time. It's really, really hard for me to lose weight. I feel like I work out all the time. And he basically said, well, this is the time in your life when you're going to be really tired and you have young kids and, you know, and kind of just brushed it off. And I went another 5 months and I finally called and made an appointment with someone else. And I had to be an advocate for myself and say, I know my body. Something is not right. And come to find out, I had extremely, I have Hashimoto's and my TSH levels were out of the ballpark. I had hundreds of antibodies, which is not healthy as well. And so, you know, that began my health journey. But I say that as, you know, if I would have went home and just went into this like place of, I'm a mom with young kids and it's just me and I need to like, you know, buck up and just handle it. That's not the case. Yeah. And so if any of you feel like you are striving to feel better and you're not getting to a place where you feel better, like just be an advocate for yourself.
That's such a good story. I have similar sentiment of that too. It's just, it can just feel so isolating and alone, and don't just stop with one. I often think, Jenna, we need like menopause doulas, just like pregnancy doulas. I just want to be like a menopause doula.
Love and that. Doctor, help you people would be amazing at that.
I know, I'm like, I'm going to start a new certification, but I just think if someone had someone to, you know, a navigator that helps someone with that and just was like a doula, right? And you're just right there alongside. I'm not prescribing, you know, that's what the doctors are doing. I don't need to be the doctor or the MD, but I just would love to, if we just all sort of had that mentality of how generationally, you know, we used to have that. And 500 years ago when women went through menopause and when they went through menstruation, they literally did have their grandmothers and aunties and they had ceremonies and they literally celebrated these things. And it was like they had these doulas that helped these, you know, 13-year-olds navigate their first menstrual cycle. But on the other end, I just want to say too, and someone who's been through it, and I'm through perimenopause, I'm officially through menopause myself, and I'm young. I would have never guessed that I would have experienced it late in my late 40s. I was way younger than my mother. But there I was. And in the middle of it, so many symptoms that just did not make sense. And nobody along the way was saying, so just same thing, having to advocate and stand up for myself and keep digging until I found the right kind of practitioner that would hear me. And we're really lucky in our regions that we have some really great practitioners, but there's a couple of different websites too, that help you find a perimenopause and menopause, like functional medical practitioner. And I can share that link with you too, Jenna, if you want that, if you want to put that out there, but it's, you know, it's really worth your weight in gold. And the frustrating part is that not everyone has access to good practitioners and healthcare. And that's the frustrating part that we face in this field, is just, there's not equal access for everyone to And so we just have to keep talking about these things in spaces like this where people can get this information.
For free. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Rees. It's always an honor to have you on. And I always learn something. I know our listeners do too, from your wealth of knowledge. So thank you for being here with us today. Like I said, I will share in the notes section some of the resources and research that you have. But thank you for having such a beautiful impact on so many people that you teach and share your light with. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, as always.